I think this will be a question. China writ large will be an issue that concerns NATO for many years going forward.
NATO's defense posture may be looking far to the east. It's Wednesday, December 4th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, U.S. warships may seek a new port of call, koalas escaping massive fires, the business of steel and renting, angels at work, and one very wealthy feline. It's all on today's VOA Asia. As Allied heads of state and government gathered in London Tuesday to commemorate the 70th anniversary of NATO, there was talk that NATO could be changing its priorities. Numerous reports speculated that, in addition to Russia, one of NATO's principal targets has become China. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg did not go that far, but did say China would be under the eye of NATO. In a Tuesday news conference, U.S. President Donald Trump took credit for what he called a different NATO.
It's covering a lot more territory. It's covering hotspots. It's covering a lot of things that were never even contemplated or thought of even 5 years ago. If you go back 5 years, they wouldn't even be thinking about the things that we're doing now. So I've become a bigger fan of NATO because they've been so flexible. If they weren't flexible, I think I would probably be not so happy.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Michael O'Hanlon, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington. He disagreed with those who claim China has replaced Russia in NATO's scope.
I don't believe there's anything close to a common NATO vision or perspective on China, to the degree that it might pose a security threat, to the degree NATO wants to do anything about it as an alliance. As you know, most of the controversy within Western Europe and the United States has been about the Huawei 5G issue. And that's a specific element of the broader question of economic and security policy towards China. But even on that one issue alone, there are many different views within NATO. And the United States, of course, is not particularly popular within NATO at the moment. NATO needs us to help defend against immediate proximate threats like Russia. But on a longer term, more insidious, more indirect and more distant threat like China, I don't believe that President Trump's in a position to forge any kind of new consensus, especially in such a short meeting. So I think this will be a question. China writ large will be an issue that concerns NATO for many years going forward. But I certainly don't expect a breakthrough in this summit.
Well, maybe not in this summit, but the NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg told delegates in London that for the first time, China was on NATO's agenda. Why do you think that was brought up?
Well, there's absolutely no doubt that China should be on NATO's agenda. China is now the world's second superpower for all intents and purposes, or at least arriving in that perch pretty soon. It has a great deal of interest in Western Europe, maybe primarily in economic terms, but because the crossover line between economics and security isn't so obvious when you're talking about advanced cyber systems, advanced communication systems, acquisition of key national assets by foreign investors, because these lines blur, a strong Chinese economic presence in Europe has to be of concern to a security organization in Europe. And so China should be on the agenda. It doesn't mean that NATO has to have a hostile policy. It doesn't mean that any of us can easily foresee what any new policy decision might be. But as a matter of discussion, I think it's only appropriate. In fact, it's necessary, and NATO would be remiss if it did not have China on a security agenda. Again, maybe for no other reason than to hear different viewpoints and different perspectives rather than to adopt a big new policy at this juncture.
What do you think some of the specifics must be when talking about China?
Well, I think we have to ask about, again, the extent to which China can be allowed to acquire or invest in the most high-tech sectors of the major Western economies and perhaps ultimately pilfer some of their best technology for its own purposes. That's both a commercial and a security concern. We have to worry about Huawei and 5G. Again, that's communications and economics, but it's also security because to the extent countries' infrastructures are dependent on a Huawei 5G network, that makes them potentially vulnerable to Chinese coercion. And then we can imagine issues that are primarily about the Pacific, but could involve the interests of NATO countries, like the ability to transit through the South China Sea, which of course China has insisted really should be considered Chinese territory for all intents and purposes. So that's just three issues that I could imagine arising in the context of a NATO discussion about China, not to mention what China and Russia may do by way of any collusion or quasi-alliance between them, which would clearly be of concern to Europeans.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking via Skype with Michael O'Hanlon, senior fellow at Washington's Brookings Institution. These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. President Trump says U.S.-China trade deal might wait until after 2020 election. Malaysian former leader Najib takes stand in 1MDB trial. Rights group says Bangladesh blocking Rohingya refugee education. North Korean defectors detained in Vietnam seek Seoul's help with asylum. Huawei moving U.S. Research Center to Canada. Read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, plus the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. China is barring American Navy ships and military aircraft from visiting Hong Kong in retaliation for the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act, legislation that supports pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more from the State Department.
Protesters marched to the U.S. consulate in Hong Kong Sunday and sang the American national anthem to thank President Donald Trump for signing two bills into law that would ban exports of anti-riot munitions to China and impose possible sanctions on Beijing based on its handling of Hong Kong. But China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs had a very different reaction, condemning the pro-democracy law.
In response to the unreasonable behavior of the U.S., the Chinese government has decided to suspend reviewing applications to visit Hong Kong by U.S. military ships and aircraft starting Monday.
In addition to the action on ships, China said it will also take sanctions against some U.S. non-governmental organizations for their role in the disturbances in Hong Kong, including Human Rights Watch and the Freedom House. Asked about what impact China's angry reaction will have on U.S. trade talks with Beijing, Trump had this to say Monday before departing the White House.
Well, it doesn't make it better, but we'll see what happens.
Speaking to students in Kentucky Monday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo called on China to keep its promises to the people of Hong Kong.
You see American flags flying at these protests. They want what you all want, what our next generation of Americans want. They want freedom, the chance to raise their families, to practice their faith in the way that they want. Those are the commitment to permitting that was made by the Chinese Communist Party.
Pompeo and other senior U.S. officials have repeatedly called on the Chinese government to honor its promises to the Hong Kong people, who say they want the freedoms and liberties that are promised in the Sino-British Joint Declaration, a UN-registered treaty. Protests erupted in Hong Kong in June over the local government's plans to allow some criminal suspects to be extradited to the Chinese mainland. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
Happening now in Asia, China has made it mandatory that new mobile phone users will have to have their faces scanned before completing their real name registration with telecom operators. That begins this month. The latest policy is worrying many netizens and also rights defenders. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. This is VOA Asia, and we're glad you're with us today. an online site raising money to help koalas displaced and injured in Australia's bushfire crisis, has become one of the country's most successful charity campaigns. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
An animal hospital in New South Wales set up the GoFundMe online campaign with a target of $17,000 to buy automatic drinking stations for distressed koalas. It has, though, raised more than $1.2 million. Donations have come from around the world, including the US, Britain, New Zealand and Germany. Much of the interest in the facility at Port Macquarie, north of Sydney, came after the dramatic rescue of a koala from charred bushland was captured on video. The marsupial, who was later called Lewis, was picked up by a grandmother who ran through the flames to rescue the badly burnt marsupial. Footage of the rescue was widely viewed on social and traditional media. Lewis was treated for his wounds, but they were so severe he couldn't be saved. Sue Ashton, the president of the Port Macquarie Koala Hospital, says the fundraising effort has been incredible.
Absolutely overwhelmed. We had no idea that it would generate so much interest. And for the Koala Hospital, it's been absolutely wonderful, but also for koalas. I think it's really brought them front and centre, and they deserve to be. They're just wonderful little creatures.
Dozens of koalas have been brought to the hospital for treatment since the fire crisis began. Blazes continue to burn across eastern Australia. Six people have died and hundreds of homes have been destroyed since the emergency began in November. The impact on wildlife is unknown, but vast areas of habitat have been scorched. Officials fear the toll on native flora and fauna will be immense. Australians have also donated to those who've lost property, but some experts believe that the huge amounts pledged to the Koala Hospital reflect broader concerns about the impact of the fires on the natural environment. The Koala fundraising effort was launched last month and is now the biggest GoFundMe campaign in Australia. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, building a Chinese industry giant and leasing for mobility. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. The United States and South Korea have begun a fourth round of negotiations over military defense cost sharing in Washington after a breakdown in talks last month. South Korea's top envoy for the negotiations expressed optimism, despite the fact that U.S. negotiators cut short talks on November 19th. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for this and much more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Chinese steel gains strength, while renting is a popular option in India, as we hear from Ira Melman on today's VOA Asia Business Scene.
Chinese industrial giant Jingye Group has agreed to buy bankrupt British Steel for an undisclosed amount. The official receiver said a rescue deal that saves thousands of jobs. Jingye added separately that it would invest $1.5 billion over the next decade to place the business, which collapsed in May, on a competitive and sustainable footing. Jingye will purchase British Steel's sprawling steelworks in Scunthorpe, northern England, as well as its other UK mills. Some 5,000 people are employed by British Steel, while another 20,000 jobs have links to its supply chain. Jingye added the pair will together form a global giant.
This is good news for steel workers and their families locally. It's good news for our steel community, and it's generally speaking a very positive day for everybody. But there's still a job to do in completing this deal. So it's important that Jingye sit down and work things through with the trade unions and other regulatory matters so that we can move on in a positive way.
Jingye plans to invest $1 billion over the next 10 years in upgrading the plants and machinery, improving environmental performance, and boosting energy efficiency. The business will continue to trade as normal until completion, which is conditional on a regulatory approval. Tens of thousands of young Indians are switching from buying to renting so they can live life with few strings attached. That's one of a growing number of Indian millennials bucking traditional norms and instead opting to rent everything from furniture to iPhones. Even businesses are renting their office furnishings, according to budding entrepreneur Vandita Morarka. When Morarka set up her nonprofit One Future Collective in 2017, she rented nearly everything she needed and funneled the savings from not having a one-off outlay into paying salaries to her staff of 25 people.
So it seemed like the easier and cheaper option to rent things that I needed and then also change them around as and when our needs shifted. So for example, if we stopped needing a laptop as much, we could switch to using a cyber cafe and use that money towards our other programs and initiatives.
From ride-hailing apps to communal office spaces, the sharing economy is a global phenomenon that is expected to generate annual revenues of $335 billion by 2025. Bangalore-based firm rents out furniture as well as appliances, gym equipment, iPhones, and smart home devices such as Google Home and Amazon Echo. For many millennials, choosing the rental option is as much about taking a road less traveled as it is about saving money. For VOA Business Scene, I'm Ira Mel.
This news break from VOA Asia. In announcing his candidacy for the Democratic presidential nomination, former New York mayor and media tycoon Mike Bloomberg says he takes a far less critical view of China's repressive internal policies than many of his opponents. Voters in state primaries will soon voice their approval or not. You can visit VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, not much is normal 1 year after what is now called the Camp Fire that burned through the Northern California town of Paradise and areas around it. 85 people were killed, thousands of homes destroyed. Many people are still displaced and desperate, but in the midst of the loss and devastation, there is a church where angels are at work. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports from a community just north of Paradise called Magalia.
The space behind this old church has become a refuge for people who are physically, emotionally, and spiritually exhausted and hungry for help.
I don't feel like I belong anywhere. I don't feel like I'm safe anywhere, and that's really hard.
Natalie Fox is here at the Magalia Community Church to pick up food and other supplies. She used to live in a home behind the church until the campfire destroyed it a year ago. Now she's living in a friend's trailer and suffering from the trauma.
One day I just looked at an old bill and I just started crying. Somebody yelled fire one day and I just started crying.
We're still in basically a catastrophe mode because the lots, for the most part, have been cleared. So that's ahead of schedule. But so people are still living in trailers, in cars, and in tents, because we also lost a lot of jobs in Paradise. People figure, well, how come you're still in need? Well, because everyone's still displaced. Nobody's in a home.
Kevin Lindstrom, the pastor here, says the church might have burned down if not for the bravery of a few men.
We are so blessed by four men who stayed and helped fight the fire around the church using dirt that they were throwing on the fire from their hands. In fact, one of the guys just told me that when the tree close to the chapel would catch fire, he was literally beating the bark of the tree with his hands.
Now the church is a parking spot for survivors fortunate enough to have a motorhome. There are showers here and a place to do laundry. The church has also become a place where fire survivors from the town of Paradise and the neighboring community of Magalia can come and get some much-needed supplies.
We've been doing this since about 4 weeks after the fire we started. As soon as we were able to get in and clean up the hall, and Red Cross came by and said, oh, you got a nice lot of space here. Could you be a distribution center? And we said, whatever God wants us to do, we'll do it. And it's just blossomed from there.
Many of the volunteers here also lost their homes to the fire, but they keep coming to help. For Lindstrom, what's happening here has strengthened his faith.
We see miracles happen here every day. During the summer, our utility bill, which was used to be $300 or $400, went to $5,000.
Lindstrom says he will keep this distribution center open as long as there is a need and the donations continue to come. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Magalia.
Millionaire businesswoman Wawrisiri Metaitapan is an immigrant success story. She started out in the United States as a typical Thai student, eager to study and enjoy new experiences. Then she adopted Nayla, a five-month-old kitten from a shelter in California. What happened next is pure internet magic. VOA's Rawan Khanna Chumchuan tells her story.
Nayla is obsessed with boxes. She loves snapping in them and absolutely hates it when she's on the wrong side of the doors. Sounds like any cat on the planet, except she's not. She's the internet's most famous cat, with more than 4 million followers on Instagram and millions of dollars under her paws. Nala's fame has forever changed her owner's life, from a Thai graduate student in the US to a millionaire businesswoman, a social media success story.
I never thought my cat will have millions of followers. It never occurred to me that I would be doing this for 5 years.
Wawrisiri Metaitapan, who goes by Pookie, was a 23-year-old business student at UCLA when she visited a shelter in California.
I didn't plan to adopt, but I saw Nala in the cage, looking so adorable. I felt a strong connection. When I picked her up, she licked my face, my nose, so I decided to adopt her.
Pookie named the Siamese and tabby mix Nala after a lead character in The Lion King. Then she did what wasn't so common way back in 2012. She created an Instagram account for Nala and shared some photos.
I wanted to challenge myself and see how many followers I can cultivate. That wasn't a day that I didn't post, and her fan numbers kept growing.
Within a year, Nala's followers jumped to about 700,000. That's when companies began paying Pookie to show Nala interacting with their products.
I haven't heard.
Expanding Nala's fan base and working with brands quickly became Pookie's full-time job after graduation.
My family wanted me to go home. My dad once asked me, what could you possibly do with just a cat?
With Nala, quite a bit. She brought home $300 for her first gig. Now, some companies pay as much as $15,000 for a few photos posted across platforms. The 9-year-old cat also bought Pookie a car and 2 houses in California. Took Pookie on a red carpet movie premiere in Hollywood.
Nala the cat!
And to numerous talk shows and events.
How are you?
In September, she made Pookie, now 32, CEO of her cat food enterprise. It's all part of maintaining the brand, as other pet influencers, dogs, pigs, even hedgehogs, line up to compete for corporate dollars. Pookie says she's not worried because right now, Nala's followers keep growing. And Nala, she's just living her best life, sitting in a box or two and pushing through closed doors, all in a day's work. Rawan Khanna Chumchuan, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online at iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube, Instagram, VOA Asia Twitter, and also on Facebook at VOA Asia. When you're not online, you can hear us on the radio. U-Radio of Hatay University, FM 101.25 at Hatay University in Thailand, carries our program. We say hello and thanks to everyone there who is listening today. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Dan Crafton, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, Doug Bernard, and our interns, Hyong Afra and Candace. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead.